Go. Huzzah! You all just got push notifications that said we're recording. So welcome to the Aries call for March 18th. We're going to talk about some stuff. We had such a great meeting last week that about the stuff needed for debt exchange, and we have some peers that we're looking at in the issue game. We're going to talk about issue credential. We have a demo of the Aries toolbox, recent stuff in there, and cool stuff. Please mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. Let's be excellent to each other and avoid any legal issues with the reuse of work. Anyone new today that has never been and would like to introduce themselves?
Yeah, my name's Craig. I'm very, very new to Aries and Indy and blockchain actually in general. So that's one of the things that I'm studying up on.
Welcome, Craig. Glad you're here. And if you haven't wandered into the Rocket Chat channel on the Hyperledger Rocket Chat server, that's a good spot for questions and stuff too. Yep.
I'm already there on Aries and a whole bunch of other things too, but is there a specific one that the working group uses?
Just the regular Aries channel is there.
Okay.
That's the main one. Awesome. Glad. Glad you're here and on there. Anyone else? All right, folks. Perfect. Announcements. IW is happening. It has gone virtual. There is a cool online platform that is designed for open space that they are working to arrange it around. So I know they're working hard on that. This, if you have not been able to come to an IW before because of logistical reasons or whatever else, this is your shot. And I think that it will be an excellent thing. There's some stuff we can't, of course, do in person, but there's also some new stuff that we have the options for that we haven't before. One of the things that occurred to me is that we always need note takers in sessions, and literally everyone will be sitting in front of a keyboard. So this should be the best notes ever taken in an IW. Look into that. I will be going. I love IW. It's the highest value conference I've ever attended, and it will be good that we're not having to skip it this time because of its digital form. So that's good. Other announcements that I don't have up here. Okay. Related meetings review. Any progress on the semantics or URSA work?
Yeah, I can go for semantics. Semantics space is going full steam ahead at the moment. So in line with the Trust Over IP Foundation, the Human Colossus Foundation in Geneva is where all of the semantics work is happening. In the big picture of things, we're fleshing out the advisory board and the technical board as we speak, and I think that our one of our first clients will probably be PharmaLedger, and PharmaLedger is a big pharmaceutical project, blockchain-enabled healthcare that's being run, spearheaded by Novartis, but it has all the massive pharma companies are in it. I think there's 12 or 13 big pharma companies and some other, and then other partners like hospitals and things like that. So we're talking a little bit about that in the semantics call. The other thing was the did space. In semantics, we've never really had a proper did thing that we could use, because we've always been interested in hashing content, but we don't really care about the location. So, for instance, if you had something like a schema base or an overlay on the sovereign network, sorry, that's probably a bad example, somewhere like a Google Drive, and then you wanted to move it to Dropbox, we don't want to change the identifier because you've changed the location. So all we really care about was the content. So we've had a call, and I think we're going to go for a did:r:hash. So it'll be r will be the method. We're going to flesh that out with all the legends in the space and get something that works. But everyone's really excited. It's been through Drummond's finally seems happy that he can start to think about putting the did spec to bed, hopefully. Yeah, so we were talking a lot about that. Brent and Robert were really bashing that out, but we had a core discussion today with Drummond and Stephen Curran and Daniel, Eric, as a few guys on that call, and I think we all came to a consensus of what we need. So now it's just a case of fleshing it out. So yeah, those are the conversations happening in semantics. But yeah, it feels like we're really powering ahead now. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul. Any IRSA related reports? Did UX?
I have a quick question about IRSA in terms of kind of like what the update on the Merkle trees revocation is. I've been out for a little while, so I apologize if this has been talked about in previous meetings. I've just been out for about a month, so I just want to know what the update on that was.
I normally call upon Mike, but Mike isn't here. Is there anyone that can give an update on that?
Oh, I might be able to say something. My understanding is that the code that supports that is all in IRSA. In order to use it at other layers, it just needs to be incorporated.
Do we know the level of incorporation in, for example, Indy?
As far as I know, Aries and Indy haven't incorporated it at all yet.
Gotcha. Is anybody working on that as far as we know, or is that still something that kind of has to get started up?
I would say it's still at the get started up phase. I know that it was on Mike's plate before the unfortunate circumstances of the weekend, so we don't know exactly what's happening next.
Got it. All right. Appreciate it.
Excellent. I appreciate that, Brent. Indy contributors or the identity working group? Any notes there? Richard, I noticed you added some notes.
Yeah, we've been focused the last month on helping people understand how to troubleshoot an Indy network. So there's a recording to a special call we did on that topic. And next Monday, we're going to pick, Sergey Key's going to join. He's going to pick an issue that was reported on the Sovereign Network that we fixed in December and show us how he went through the logs to find the solution to the problem. So that should be useful.
Excellent. And then the DIDCOM working group, we talked about the Tobias's JWM and how that applies to DIDCOM, and got some clarity and some corrections around that. So that conversation was good this week as well. I have not yet posted the recording. And then Steve, I think I spoke before you did.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. For the identity implementers call, we meet every other week, and this is our off week, but we will be meeting next Thursday morning at 9:00 Mountain Time.
Excellent. Thank you, Steve.
And the identity working group had Daniel Bockenheimer from Accenture presenting on, what was he presenting on? He presented on a bunch of stuff. The recording should get posted, so be able to check out. It looks like known traveler identity and World Economic Forum and the blockchain and smart contract standard. He does a little bit of lots of stuff.
Awesome. Very cool. All right.
Sam, I don't know if it counts under announcements or related meetings or agenda items, but I do think it's worth taking 5 minutes and discussing the status of the Sovereign Foundation and if your role in our community will change any.
Let's do that after, let's do that at the beginning of the agenda. I can share that for a couple of minutes.
Sounds good.
And open for other people that would like to comment as well. Perfect. Okay. Protocol test suite, any updates?
No updates, thank you.
Thanks, Daniel. Every shared libraries.
Quick question.
Oh, yeah, Kyle.
Oh, wait, not test suite. I'm looking at toolbox. Sorry.
Cool. Every shared libraries. Any updates there?
progress keeps going on Indy Credex. Andrew's made good progress on getting that going, was able to run a branch of ACAPI using IndyCredX for instead of Indy SDK, and that seemed to work fine. So progress is being made.
Very cool.
Similarly, we've done a proof of concept running, putting Indy VDR into libindy, and found some problems, but they're fixable. And yeah, the result of proof of concept is we're pretty excited. We think we might be able to get it into an April release at some point. That's our current thinking.
Excellent.
I also see a PR pending to start adding rich schema supports in the VDR, which is nice.
Yes, we're making progress on, and thanks, Andrew. The current thinking is rich schema and Revocation 2, and Anoncreds 2, our goal is to get those into the Aries shared libraries instead of putting them into libindy, and then call these Aries shared libraries from libindy. And that way we only maintain one code base and we move forward quicker. That's the current thinking. So anybody who wants to collaborate with us, that's what we're rallying around.
Thank you, Richard. Aries Cloud into Python.
Four 4.5 release is out. Nothing, had a couple of verification fixes in it. Nothing radical in that. The big thing is revocation based on Anoncreds 1 is merged into master, and we're working on that for the next release. So Tails files are needed. So as I mentioned in the notes, use case support will be limited. Basically, you've got to keep the Tails file small. Small, just so you know, just so folks know, we've run 25,000 we were thinking we might use, and that is a 6 meg file. And so if you're using with mobile agents, you got to realize that the mobile agent has to download the Tails file. So 6 meg is getting on a size where we want to keep, we don't want to go a lot larger than that, if at all, and probably smaller for our use case. It will probably be even more conservative than that. That doesn't mean you're limited to that many. You can create as many revocation registries as you want. So you can have larger use cases than that number of credentials. But that might be the increment you wanted to create them in. We are currently testing with mobile agents to get feedback on the process. From what we understand, the eSatis folks were able to process the revocation based credential that was issued and be able to prove that. So that's cool. We're working with Street Cred and Ozma to get those two working as well. So hopefully that will be soon and we'll be able to have that available in the community for all to use.
And just to clarify, that's 6 meg for the user for each revocable credential they hold.
So the way it works is when you get a credential, in order to prove it, you have to get the associated Tails file for it. Your individual credential would be for one, would be associated with one revocation file, and so you must get it. If you have two credentials of the same thing and they both come from the same revocation registry, you wouldn't need to have two copies of the file. You just need one. If you have two credentials and they both come from different revocation registries associated with the same credential definition, you would need two files. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's in line with what I was thinking. Just wanted to clarify.
Yep. Cool.
Perfect. And this, again, if you haven't did want to see that in action, a couple of meetings ago, we had a demo during the meeting that will be in the recorded recording that you can watch, which is pretty cool, using ACAPI. So that's merging in and progress being made. Very cool. Thank you. Aries Framework Go.
Hey there. So we're working on out-of-band protocols, present proof protocols, and we finished the BDD tests for issue credential protocol.
Very cool. Do we have Jack? Aries?
Yes, Framework. I'm here. Yep. Not much to update, except I'm working with, we're going to use the vaccination records for a verifiable credential example with Jonathan Holt and myself on the IEEE 2418.6 committee. That's a nice use case for pushing things forward from a a developer point of view of the SDK.
Excellent. .NET, ArrayFramework.net. Anything to report?
Yeah, so we have a small feature coming in. There's a PR pending for adding support to backup and restore. This is tied into the Mediator agent implementation. So people using the ArrayFramework.net for mobile will be able to utilize backup and restore out of the box.
Very cool. That's awesome. Okay. We are going to hear about the toolbox. Is there anything specifically static agent Python related?
Nothing to report there.
Okay. And we'll skip the toolbox because we have a demo a little bit later outlining some of those things. I guess the coming soon, though, is done. Cool. Framework JavaScript or SDK JavaScript. I don't see usual supporters for that project in our meeting today. Perfect.
One, I would add, I heard from Jay this morning. So they have their things, and I'm not sure whether it's the JavaScript or the Java or their other React Native implementation, but it's now working with Akapai. They've been working on that. And they have a mediator that they've created in TypeScript that they want. And he and I were talking about getting that pushed to Hyperledger. So the thought is we would have an Aries-mediator-language or you know something like that. So there's a couple of people I've heard of that have those. So Ajay and the IonWorks team have that. And then possibility of Sukalpo has been working on one based on Kafka, mediator based on using that technology. So that might be another one that gets pushed to Hyperledger. Just a matter of interest, anyone have comments and people are okay with that idea that we have Aries-mediator-x created?
Yeah, no opposition. I've heard of language specific projects. To be clear, any agent can be a mediator, but in the interest of high scalability, having a purpose built mediator just for that purpose
seems
wise.
Yes, and that's what both of these are: is they're purpose built to be mediators.
Yep.
I think that's fine, but I want to retain, like, I'd like it to be common knowledge that you don't need to have a special mediator unless you need those properties. So like I want it to be known, well known, that mediation is just another protocol. A couple of times we've described mediation as something different from protocols, and I've always felt like that was a step in the wrong direction.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to support DIDCOM and you have to support the protocols that enable mediation. So I think that's clear, but I'm happy to figure out where that would go as part of that. But I think these frameworks that are purpose-built for that, so people can easily spin up. Thing I'm looking forward to is I've been talking as well to, if I could for a second, to Tobias and Sakalpo about pushing Ozma into a Hyperledger repo as well. And that, what that would enable us to do is basically give someone who wants to start out and understand the technology and so on a way to actually spin up relatively quickly a mobile agent with a mediator talking to something else and be able to do that and then sort of figure out where do they want to go from there. I mean, I know, you know, some don't like the idea of Xamarin, so they just want to rush off to create their own more what they would consider more native mobile agent, but at least this gives them a fast way to experiment, see what it's like and see, you know, see the capabilities and perhaps work with the user interface, the user experience on the mobile side and so on. So I'm excited to see those code bases come into Hyperledger so we can reference them in that way.
Agree with both Daniel and Steven.
And I was going to mention that Go Framework has one built in as well. And it has a Docker image that you can fire up. So it'll be interesting to see Dash Mediator repos and framework repos that have overlap, I guess.
Yep. And figuring out how to do that is maybe we create a Mediator dash go that points to the framework, and all it is a README that says how do you use it specifically for as a mediator.
Well, it strikes me that we need some documentation somewhere that talks about that concept and then links to various ones, agents that can mediate, and then also purpose-built mediators, you know, for that particular shape. So, so there's some good options there.
I was giving one update on Osmo. Sorry, Sam.
No, please,
Thomas. Since you mentioned that one of our developers is actually trying to add mediator support to the Osmo code base that uses the same framework that Osmo uses, but it's a very simple implementation that is currently supported by the framework. We haven't committed that code yet, but it's coming in.
Okay, cool. We should probably get a discussion going on Rocket Chat about that. Bring Sakalpo in and Tobias in, and we can see, you know, what's the best way to proceed here. It sounds like everyone's moving in parallel, and you know, probably not overdoing a lot of work, but definitely for the community, we want to present a very for those new to the community. Present a first step. Here's where to go for the first step of that.
All right, sounds good. I'd be happy to sync.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Hi guys, as well. I just want to jump in. I definitely think that would be great. So currently I'm trying to train like 12 students so one of them's looking at Osmo at the moment, but I think they do find it a bit tough just to get started. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I'm dying to have something that I can understand, which that sets a low bar, a high bar for me to understand. Anyway, but that we can get started, that somebody could get started, you know, quickly and be able to either, you know, right away run a simulator so they can see it, or, you know, how to build an APK and load it onto a mobile device so they can get started in, you know, an hour as opposed to trying to figure it all out. So that is more a documentation effort, I think, and I'm definitely encouraging that be included in this idea that we push Osmo into the Hyperledger, is that it include that sort of help in getting started.
It strikes me that a conversation about mediators could be really useful for next week's topics. So we'll keep an ear to Rocket Chat as we see how things progress this week. And if we can have some updates or some things there, that might be really useful. Cool. Any other updates that we didn't cover? Awesome. Okay, first on the agenda, the Sovereign Foundation has had an adjustment this last week. I'll give a quick summary, and then then open it up for other comments or things. You know, if I say something wrong or incorrect, that'd be awesome to be corrected. So, the Sovereign Foundation has had a paid staff that helped facilitate a handful of things in the community and with the Sovereign Network. The Sovereign Foundation has never actually run a node on the networks, and so. That's not a role it plays. All the nodes are run by stewards. And so the funding and the fundraising model of the foundation, has been unable to support the ongoing operation of the full-time staff. There are currently lots of meetings going on to try and figure out what that looks like in the future. And what the options are there. But as current, there are no paid staff. And which means that the things that the foundation was doing that we want to continue to happen, we'll need to figure out how to distribute that work among volunteers. Richard asked about my involvement. I intend to remain involved as long as I can. Ideally, I end up with an employment scenario that allows support of the meetings, both the Aries Working Group meeting and the other meeting I've been heavily involved in is the DIDCOM Working Group at the DIF. And I'm seeking to be involved going forward. And if there need to be any changes there, I can, you know, if I'm unable to, then there's already people, you know, Stephen Curran is one here that is heavily involved, and there's other folks that can take that role over. So nothing will really change as far as the meetings go, and I hope to be able to be involved in the future. So that's a bit of a summary. Are there any clarifications or, Lynn had a clarification. We do have nodes on the other networks for the ease of management, but not one on the main net. So we have one on Builder and Staging. Any other clarifications or questions on the Sovereign Foundation situation?
There was a steward call, and the understanding is that stewards are still committed to the network. We don't expect any interruption for the network. We don't expect any interruption to the continued contributions on open source projects, though, of course, it might get difficult for some of the current contributors to continue contributing. I put a note in the agenda. If any of your teams are hiring, let Mike and Lynn and Sam and Ken and team know. There's some good talent on the market right now, and hopefully your team can pick them up.
I'll add a little something as well. This is Lynn. I have been one of the main people that has been doing network operations to keep the networks up and going. I will continue to do that until there's a committee called the Transition Committee that's working on trying to transition from what Sovereign Foundation used to be into what it will be going forward. And until they've made any statements or whatever, I will continue to watch and manage the network and keep it up and going. And then if needed, I will pass that knowledge on to whoever ends up taking over that afterwards. So the intent is that the networks will all continue to run and there will be continuity there.
Thank you, Lynn, for all that you do. Other comments, questions?
This meeting is being hosted on a Zoom account that's currently paid for by the foundation. Does it need a move?
We will see. I'll keep an eye on that. I believe it's my meeting. One of the changes that I anticipate making is taking over the paid status of that account so that it's not being paid for by the Sovereign Foundation, but is still paid. So we'll work that out.
Thanks for taking 5 minutes on that topic. Helped answer questions to hear that everybody, to hear from you that you heard what I heard makes me feel better about everything.
Yeah.
Which is that there's no disruption. And definitely, I've been sharing around your LinkedIn info for many of you Sovereign Foundation, well, all of you Sovereign Foundation folks, the many of you that are on the call. And I hope other people do the same.
Daniel, who has volunteered to give us a demo of the toolbox, is among those looking. And so if you're impressed by his efforts and presentation today, then please do reach out. Perfect. Okay. We have, to play the issue game, I have three PRs actually that we're talking about. That I hope we can make pretty good progress on. The first one here is by Andrew, and the changes we talked about last week with the JSON web signatures to attachments for signed attachments is what comprises this. There is one section with comments on it. The only real question, we talked about whether the signature should be within the data portion or outside of the data portion. This is a pretty minor issue. And it looks like Daniel and Stephen are voting for inside the data element as opposed to outside the data element. Any particular opinions on this one? Let me see if I can come up with a relevant section here. The issue, this is a little bit broken up with the comments in between, but here's the attachment block, and then there's data. Data has base64, and we had put the JWS block here as a sibling to data instead of a child to data. Any further comments or thoughts on this?
This feels a bit weird. Because the payload is also the data, correct?
What do you mean the payload is also the data? So the data block has the representation of the data inside, which may be the Base64 encoding, could also be a link, etc., depending on the format of the attachment.
Oh, and then you also have the... So that's what I am trying to clarify, is if the payload is redundant to the data within the attachment.
It's not. It is the data. So let me find the relevant section here. So the bytes represented here on the Base64 is the payload. The JWS is omitted. There's a format of JWS that allows the payload to not be present here as long as it's knowledgeably reconstructed. And so for clarity and consistency between signed attachments and unsigned attachments, having the data be external this way, and this is within the JWS spec, Andrew found it, that allows you to have this behavior. So the payload of the JWS is not redundantly included for the sake of not having to pass the data twice.
So is it like a detached signature scheme?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that correct, Andrew?
Yeah, that's right. It's called detached content in the JWS spec.
Okay. That seems fine. I know there's not going to be many Jose libraries that support that functionality, so others will probably have to implement it. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure we weren't redundantly setting that.
Well, yes. You just have to pre-process it before you pass it to the library.
That makes sense.
Right. So you can still use the library, but you have to, you know, remove and knock that section out. So you can still use it. It's important to, if we don't do that, we end up with this awkward circumstance where the structure of a signed attachment is substantially different from the structure of an unsigned attachment. And that gets really awkward. And so this detached content allows for the representations of the data to be the same and have the signature be an addition without changing the fundamental structure. That was one of my issues with using a JWS, and Andrew found the right solution, I believe.
Okay. And we never intend to support compact serialization, I assume? Because we already have a JSON structure.
Yeah, there's a comment about that. I mean, we can't because there's an unprotected header, and compact form doesn't support that.
Okay.
It also makes a variation, an additional variation, because we have signatures as well. So that's one of my comments, is that whether we have a use case where attachments might need to be signed by multiples. And so the question is do we just assume that a JWS library is being used? And so when we pass it this block, perhaps with the payload reconstructed, that it handles it appropriately and it will validate the signatures as necessary, or do we only go with the form of JWS that allows for multiple signatures? It's a little bit more verbose is the downside. The upside is that we would be consistent between. But that was last week. It seemed like the consensus was that allowing both wasn't really a problem, since this JWS block is very likely to be processed by a library anyway.
Yep, that makes sense. Okay, I see where you guys are after, and I think it makes sense.
So the question being, does JWS belong as a sibling here, or does it belong as a child of the data block?
I think how you have it as a sibling makes sense.
The sibling seems to have more parallel to the verifiable credentials envelope as well, right? Where we have the claims attribute, and then we have the proof block after that.
There's a couple of votes inside of the issue, or the PR rather, for having it be a subset of data, a child of data. Couple there, Stephen and Daniel Hardman. I think you were advocating that way. I don't super strongly feel one way or the other, but.
So I don't super strongly feel this either, but I feel like the examples are neglecting the other things that can go inside the data things, and it would become obvious that it's more logical to be inside if we put the other things that can go inside data next to it. But since we never do, then it seems reasonable to move it outside, and we're creating an inconsistency.
Well, and the other thing is, outside implies you're signing the whole thing with the JWS signature, right, including the envelope. Right. If you're not doing that, then it doesn't have any business outside.
Yeah, that was my thought, that it looks like the signature may cover the MIME type, the file name, and the data, as opposed to simply the value within the data.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Daniel, you brought up the other types of forms. Can you comment a little bit more on that? The examples that we're not showing?
So attachments have always allowed the possibility that you only attach semantically, you don't provide the data. And the way that you do that is you say, inside the data, I'm going to give you a hash of the data and I'm going to give you a URL where you can download it, but I'm not going to give you the actual bytes of the data. So they are attached in air quotes. The data is there, but only in air quotes. You don't actually see what's present. So already inside of data, you have the notion of, here is a tamper-proof way of knowing that you are looking at the right data. And if you have that inside the data curly braces, then it seems like a signature saying, here's a tamper-proof way of knowing that you're looking at the right data when the data is present, would also belong right there. And in fact, you could imagine a signature over data that isn't present in the between the data curly braces. You have to go fetch it, but it's still there as a signature. Does that make sense?
Yes, that does make sense.
Anyway, I said I don't have that strong of an opinion. If we decide we want to take it out, then the other thing I would want to do for consistency's sake is take everything else out too, and we would just get rid of data. This doesn't seem to me like it makes sense to have data be separate for some things and not for others.
I think given your argument, I'm inclined to leave it in and put the JWS inside as well. Other thoughts?
Do we expect that DataBox would always be signed with JWS, or do we need to do the abstraction like we've done with verifiable credentials and have more than one, you know, like a proof or a signature block that then includes the JWS data?
I would suggest sticking with one for simplicity. Even JSON-LD allows for the use of JWS in some of the signature suites.
Okay, I'm just asking because I'm trying to catch up on where everyone's at. Thanks.
So given that the data can actually be a link and a hash, putting the JWS inside there in as a sibling to the link in the hash, or the hash is the relevant piece there, seems like a really good argument for including it inside the data block. Is there anyone opposed and wishes it to stay where it is here? It sounds like the consensus is going inside. Is there anyone opposed to that view? Okay, I'm hearing nothing. Andrew, it sounds like that might be the only needed update to this PR. And then ready for a merge?
Okay, I'll get that updated.
Awesome. Thank you for the commentary. Next issue.
Can I just say thank you to Andrew for writing this up? We've had this on our to-do list for a while, and I was so delighted when I saw that somebody had knocked it off. I'm just really glad to clear this out of the backlog. Thank you, Andrew.
Well, Nate, nice to get your earlier changes merged into the repo instead of lost.
Yes, this is something we had attempted a while ago and got busy and distracted. So this is awesome. Yes, echo the agreement and the thanks of Andrew here. Next issue was also a topic we talked about last week, and this is the this is a PR I raised, and I split the messages discussed into two separate sections. And so, rather than having just a complete message, there is a complete message and a reuse message. And that's here. There are no comments on the PR here. Are there any comments now about these particular changes? Or are these ready to merge? Does silence imply that everyone understands it? or that no one objects?
My silence is I haven't taken a look at it, but that means I don't object.
This isn't the final ratification of a status change either. So it probably can, it sounds like we can just merge this one and continue discussion. This is an important piece of sort of cleaning up the protocol in exchange of trying to finalize did exchange and adding support for that.
I see some references to out of band that should probably have hyphens.
Probably. We skipped one here, but I have an out of band question mark, Stephen. I haven't seen a PR for that yet.
It's already been merged. That's why
I couldn't find it.
It's there.
Well, I will go find it then, and I will. I'll go ahead and link to that.
0434.
0434.
Yeah, 0434.
Perfect. That is good to hear. 04. I'm in the wrong section, though. Or am I?
It should be in proposed. Is this getting updated? I didn't do any update to this.
This might not be, which is part of the problem. So I will make sure that happens.
Yeah, I think we should continue to do it as maintainers, but I didn't do it. I just got the message saying something died with actions.
Yeah, there's some annoying issues with actions generation that are annoying that we haven't sorted through yet. So I'll see if I can.
Do we have any actions gurus on the call that would be willing to help out with that one?
The silence is deafening.
Not a single raised hand.
You're asking for somebody who's dealt with GitHub Actions before that can help with this specific pipeline?
Yes.
Yeah.
Please reach out to Nikita and Sergey. We can have somebody help out.
Okay.
Sorry, Sergey and Andrew Nikitin. I know Andrew Whitehead has worked with Andrew Nikitin, so he has their contact. But they're on Rocket Chat too.
Perfect. I've written that down as well. Excellent. I will go ahead and update this too with the appropriate links. Have we had a PR against did exchange with that removes the invitation section and links to that as well? Did that already happen?
No, we have not done that. And I think this one should be either accept this one first and then do it, or do it as part of this one.
Okay, it sounds like we should accept this one and then go through it and get the cleanup there.
Yeah.
To make that happen. So perfect. So we've got two that are ready. The third one that I wanted to bring up was this one. Stephen opened this, and it's about it changes to the timing RFC as it relates to ignored fields and buyer's time handling. And there weren't were there comments on here? I forget precisely. There's been no conversation on this particular one, but this one seems like it should be. Any thoughts on this particular PR? Okay, let's read this one if you're interested, and we'll see if we can move that along. We've taken up too much time in the game, and we need to move along. But appreciate this, and I'm excited about the did exchange adjustments that we're making to get that closer and closer to being done and finished. So awesome. We have two things on the agenda. Stephen Curran's going to run an issue credential discussion, and then we have a toolbox demo with the recent toolbox changes by Daniel. Stephen, are you ready for that?
Yes, I am.
Stop sharing. There you go.
Okay, and I will share. In preparation for this, I decided to just open an issue, so I will share my screen and be able to bounce. So I did open an issue on this morning. Basically, update 00036 to remove indieisms, as Troy and I were talking about them yesterday, in the credential proposal. So when we first did the credential proposal 1.0, we had a reference to a cred def. 1.1 increased that by referencing a whole bunch of fields that were the credential were Indy specific, basically IDs. And that's something we specifically avoided in all of the other messages in 0036 and 0037. So the basic proposal is to take this structure and, whoops, turn it into this. So Stephen Klump did a first cut of this. And so basically convert the credential proposal to look just the same as all of the other messages in the, or the proposed credential into all of the other messages in the issue credential protocol. So there is still a preview. I think this should probably call preview, but it could be called proposal, but that's okay. Maybe that's what it was before. But the big thing is to move those six fields into a attachment and basically add the comment that for Indy, this is what the attachment looks like. So I don't think it's controversial. The big thing is though, that it changes it to be a new major version of the protocol. So it becomes 2.0. So that is one piece related to that. Sorry, I wanted to go to this one. So one piece is to move it to 2.0 and make those changes. I will note that Stephen's, so a mistake I made in advising on the 1.1 was that I had the versioning at the message level, not at the protocol level. So Stephen's cut of that, this link that I've got to his repo, still does that. It's at the message level, not at the protocol level. So that has to be corrected. So we will be changing that. Any comments, first of all, on that change? Is any objections to that as to move that into a 2.0 protocol?
So what is it about the changes that we're making that require it to be a major change?
We're dropping a field and we're adding a request field. That's okay. What changes it.
Okay. Well, adding a request field doesn't change it.
Exactly.
Okay. But dropping okay.
Dropping the six fields.
Okay.
Basically, these six fields go away and get replaced by an attachment that, if you're using Indy, could include all of these.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm good. So
any other comments?
Do we want to version those attachments in any way, and like specify those when doing this move? I think that might play into your second issue, actually, too.
Nope, doesn't. What do you mean by that? So if I go to what's proposed. This is what is proposed.
So what I'm thinking about here is that I may want to be able to process both levels of attachment. So say, for example, we use the one that we're moving to, and then there's going to be a different style of attachment. Should I just be able to parse any style of attachment? Or is there any sort of like versioning or semantics that I should be able to use to be able to handle that? I think that may be the add ID symbol to handle that. And so we might be able to version inside there, but throwing the idea out there.
So to clarify, because this is the thought that was dinging around in my head, was that if I have the filter as an attachment, what type of filter am I actually specifying here? Is it an Indy one, or is it a different one, or is it an Indy one, or an Indy two, or an Indy three? As we, you know, improve things going forward, how do I tell what the actual type is there?
Yeah.
The other thing that we could do.
Do we have that same problem on all the other messages? Like, it looks like we have that same problem on all of them then, right?
We did, except that that was related to the versioning of the message. And now we're detaching the versioning of the message from the versioning of the attachment. And we're not providing a method inside of the attachment for that purpose.
Hold on. Like this offer credential, it doesn't have that capability, does it?
Oh, I see what you mean. No, I don't think it does, but it probably should.
Ah.
So what you're proposing is, in all of these, potentially we need to add some sort of method so that the person, so that the receiver knows more precisely what this is in here.
Yes. The other thing that I would love to do, if it doesn't need to be Base64 for the purposes of encoding something, it would be nice to use the JSON representation inside of data, just for readability sake.
That comes back to the attachment. Attachment.
Well, we already allow that. But we're just not using that. Yeah.
Okay.
So inside of data, you can actually have a JSON representation, which is just JSON. It's not encoded as anything. And if we don't need it to be encoding, then it actually makes it a little simpler to not to.
That's why we have a MIME type. So if you're going to put, JSON in there, then you use the MIME type of JSON. And the one thing you give up is you can't sign it.
Correct. But you can also, in the data block, instead of Base64, can't we just say JSON and then the JSON object of the attachment thing is what's there? We don't have to Base64 encode
it. Yes.
Right.
But that makes, what Daniel said sort of, it already says application JSON here, and yet it's in Base64. So
well, that's because it could be Base64 encoded JSON.
I'm assuming it is. But if it just, it doesn't help me to say, oh, I'm going to read this. Oh, that must be JSON. Well, no, I've got to see that it's Base64. So I think wouldn't there need to be a difference between what's JSON and what's Base64 JSON encoded in Base64? Like, I'm confused there as to what you would set the MIME type to.
The MIME type is declaring what's the MIME type of the bytes of data in their, you could call them their native representation.
Yeah, yeah.
The Base64 is saying, I'm going to give you a transformation of those bytes into Base64 for convenience. Right. Presumably, you could have another field called Base58 and do it in that format if you wanted. Sure. But either way, the MIME type wouldn't change.
Right. Okay. So what Sam's asking for is not that there be a Base64 here, but you actually put the JSON data right in here, right? Isn't that what you're saying, Sam?
That is what I'm advocating for, yes.
Yeah. So we don't have a Base64. We just have JSON data in here.
Well, so we could have the JSON data in there, but there would have to be a field to hold it. We couldn't have the content between the curly braces be JSON.
Correct.
Because there has to be substructure.
So there's data, colon, data, colon, JSON.
Yeah.
Is that what we're saying?
That's what I'm saying. And I believe that's already in the attachments spec, although I could be wrong.
I mean, to me, I would just be looking back at the attachment spec saying, what does it allow us to do? I thought we were kind of constrained by this, but I'm not 100% on the attachment. So we definitely need to look at that. So that's a separate issue, I think, which is...
So I was just going to mention that present proof has a different example, right? That has ID being living.
Can we mute whoever that is?
Yeah, got it.
Thanks. Say that again, Troy.
I was just saying that present proof has the example with ID field, including libind as the prefix.
So look at the present proof option.
Yeah, let me jump to that.
I was going to start my comment with we'd have the same issue in present proof, and then I was just looking at the example in there.
And we don't, you're saying?
Well, I'm just saying that in those examples, it's ID string is prefixed with libindy.
So an example is given. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the best way to do it. I'm just... saying yeah. That the examples are a little bit different.
Okay, so everyone's seeing the difference here. In the issue, we don't say what it looks like. We don't give any opinion on what it looks like. Here, there's obviously opinion given on what it would look like. So that's the equivalent. So we kind of have another couple of issues.
Yeah, and I think I'll take a look at what you guys end up coming with, because right now the identifier could work.
Another mute, please, whoever's that typing. Thanks. Go ahead, Kyle, sorry.
I was going to say, I think the identifier could work, but I don't think we properly scoped it enough.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me.
Yep, so I'll take a look at that. I think we just stick with the same convention as what we've been using for the at ID or the at type. That might actually be convoluting those two. I'm not sure.
I mean, it's interesting. We did have, like, on the preview, I believe, it actually had, there's something we have that uses this format, like, you know, the obviously our evolved one, not DidSolve, but the evolved one that uses this style to be something other than the type of a message, and I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah, it's shown in the there. I was actually going to bring that up as a separate topic that present proof. The preview doesn't use an attachment.
Yeah, here's credential preview. Which is actually embedded in these things. And it doesn't, here's credential preview, which is a JSON LD object, which looks like this. And it has this style of type to it. And maybe that's what we need to do.
So if you look inside the represented JSON and you find the at type, then that would tell you what you're looking at, right?
Right.
And that could be sufficient. Daniel Bloom in the comments in the Zoom chat posted a link to what the attachments RFC says about JSON.
Oh, okay.
Straight. And so that's a useful thing too. But it doesn't solve this particular problem. It's ancillary. So.
Okay.
So it sounds like we need an at type inside of the actual JSON that tells you what it is. And then you know that, you know, whether you're looking for an indie variety or something else.
Okay. So we need those two things added to this as part of the 2.0, which is some sort of way to version the attachment. Version the attachment type. And then a second, the second is JSON directly versus the base 64.
Can I also make a request with that versioning of the type that we do some sort of like registry or something within the RFC, so that they're easy to find to build against?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, and then the last is this sort of rationalization of should the preview itself be an attachment? And is that what you're proposing, Troy?
So I'd have to go back and see which one I was looking at, but I think it was a credential preview. I think that's one point. And the other one would be, I'd assume the actual attachments in this protocol would also have to have this new type idea as well, so you know what you're looking at in the present proof attachments.
Yeah.
So in the attachment spec, it talks about there's a variety of methods of inlining things, if you will. And we've done two different ones here. Credential preview is an inlined JSON LD object directly that is JSON. And then the offers attach is sort of a more formalized thing there that says, oh, here's the attachment. We should probably do all of one or all of the other.
Well, the credential preview was done very deliberately, so it's less clear. The idea is the offer attach by externalizing, you know, by taking it out of the protocol, you're doing that because the representation in these specific data may vary based on the verifiable credential model. The credential preview is saying, here are the claims and values that I'm offering. And that is independent. And the claim was at that time anyway, that is independent of the verifiable credential model you are using, whether you're using, you know, JSON LD or JOTS or ZKPs. doesn't matter. The claims and the values are independent of that. And therefore, it's okay to inline that versus these, which is not okay to inline, because then we have to get into the specifics of each credential type. So that's the argument. So it's less clear to me that this needs to be other than inlined, but I could be convinced otherwise.
Yeah, you might have to interpret. So I was trying to think about that also, Stephen. Mm-hmm. You probably have to interpret like credential definition ID, knowing what kind of network or ledger you're targeting. So it might be a little bit ambiguous without that knowledge, I guess.
Right, but that's the thing we're getting that we started this with, was we're getting rid of that.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm just saying that the actual schema for presentation preview has those things in it.
Oh, it sure as hell shouldn't. Okay, so that would blow apart mine. It sure shouldn't. No, it's just got the name, the attribute name, the value, and a MIME type. It doesn't have anything that's
indie. I was looking at presentation preview.
Ah, okay, my apologies. Presentation preview should be the same. So that sounds like it's just a separate issue. It's probably a bug.
Okay.
Here's 37. So you've got, you're saying presentation preview. Oh, there it is right there. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't think it should have this in it.
Yeah, that was what I was wondering. That was what I was wondering about as well, yeah.
And I don't think it should have this in it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Clean up on aisle 7.
I also wonder for the credential preview if that's going to be compatible with rich schemas. Looks like it might be, as long as the attributes can be structured, but
again, I can't see why it wouldn't be. In that it should be, well, I guess the only thing is, yeah, I guess if you've got other than a flat list, I've lost where it is, but yeah, here it is. I mean, this implies a flat list of claims. So if a verifiable credential type can have a other than flat list of claims, then that becomes more interesting. Do we think we need to support that?
Isn't that what rich schemas allow?
Nope. The mapping object takes it down into a flat list.
Well, it gets flattened by the time it is a credential definition.
But it gets, but what the preview would be, what you would be sending is a flat list. There's no structure in what you would be sending. So the preview would,
I don't think that's accurate. That.
Okay.
So the credential itself will still be a hierarchy of values. The attribute list will just be a flat list, but the attributes are just, you know, 256-bit integers. So the credential itself is going to have structure.
Okay. So given that argument, then I would say this credential preview now has to go the same, the way of the attachment. I would definitely agree with that. So that would take me over to that argument. And I think the fact that even this is a question says we got to do that, because we don't, you know, even saying that, we don't know for sure that it's always going to be a flat list, and already we've got concern it's not. So I would say, yeah, we've got to change this to be an attachment, which basically means up here in the offer and in the proposal and the offer, this has to change to be preview tilde attach, and it have the same attributes as, you know, the same construct as this. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yep.
It does, with the exception that if it's always going to be application JSON and always represented in the JSON form, then we're not actually getting anything by using the explicit tilde attached instead of just inlining it. That was the point that I was trying to make earlier. If we need the ability to represent something, for example, as Base64, which we will elsewhere, then it's really useful to have. And maybe for consistency's sake, we just need to, should do that anyway, because we have some that need it and some that don't.
Sorry, I'm confused. The attachment is separate from whether this is Base64 or not, isn't it? That's a separate question. I mean, if the attachment supports inlining the JSON, I'm good with that.
Me too, except that if the MIME type is going to be application JSON and it's going to be inlined JSON and we don't really need the attachment identifier because we're looking inside the JSON for the type, then there's very little difference between just having credential preview be a JSON LD object as specified and having offer be the same way. The only thing that we really gain with attachment is when we're actually including a Base64 encoding or having a signature there. Otherwise, you can just inline it without making it a attachment field. So that was the point that I brought up, is that there's a variety of ways of doing this. And if we're going to have an attachment that's always JSON and always has the same MIME type, then it doesn't necessarily make sense. If we need it to be a different value, but the credential preview here is just JSON. It doesn't have to be an attachment. It could just be, you know, the embedded JSON LD doc, if you will, that has a type just to specify what it is. Maybe I'm confusing in my argument.
Yeah, you lost me with that.
We have to subtype it, so kind of an attachment makes sense from that point of view.
Except that the attachment doesn't give you any type. All it does is tell you the MIME type of what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that probably needs to be fixed too. But.
Well, except that we just decided, or earlier we talked about just using the at type inside of the JSON structure to actually give it that typing.
No, which just said it needs to be done. I don't think we came with a final solution for that.
Oh, well, if we do it outside in the attachment structure, that makes sense. If we're going to do it inside as an at type attribute like we've done here, then it doesn't. Then both mechanisms contain that because they both contain the exact same thing. We don't have to discuss this here. Yeah. Let me bring it up on an issue when we can talk about it there, and then it's easier to banter about details with examples.
Yeah. Yep. I will. Maybe we can address this. I think this, so I had one more issue in this that I am going to remove, but if we could take 2 seconds, let's go back to where I started, and that the only change was going to be ignoring all the other things we've discovered that has to change as well. If the only change we were making was to convert those 6 fields to move them into an attachment, it is a major change, so therefore it goes from the 1 to the 2 version. I was saying in this question, so this now becomes a total hypothetical because the changes we're talking about here are much bigger than that, so this doesn't apply to this one. Is it automatic that when there's a new major version, we create a new RFC with a new number? Is that a given that we're going to do that? Or is there, if it's not a big, it requires a major change because of the rules of major, which is we're deleting a field or deleting a bunch of fields, we have to make it a major. But do we also have to create a new RFC document for it?
So generally in RFC processes, good links get their own kind of branding after a period of time. Mm-hmm. Like if you go look at PEP8 in Python, it is the definitive style guide. RFC, if you will, even though it's been replaced several times, the PEP8 link will always go get you to the latest version that you need in order to do your work.
Right.
I expect we'll see a similar thing happen with RFC numbers, that certain RFC numbers, like for instance, the one for Aries interoperability profiles, will be well enough known in the community that we will need to preserve the RFC number as the current revision. When we want to propose a new version, I think we should, if it's a new major version, we should always start it as its own RFC until we figure it's generally accepted enough to repoint the main RFC to it. And so that's why I think this rule of we always start a major version with a new RFC number holds true for us as editors of the spec. But, you know, in terms of consumers who read the spec later on, I think it's not going to seem as clear cut as that.
I think that starting it as a new RFC helps us manage the status of the new version. And though we don't end up with weirdness where we're changing the status on an old, already, you know, well adopted RFC to propose a new one.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm of two minds here as well. I really don't like how IETF manages stuff. So I like what's been proposed by Nathan to at least provide some linking structure. And yeah, I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thanks all. That took a lot longer than I thought it would, but that was really good conversation. We'll figure out where to go. I think Stephen and I can run with that one for now and put a put an actual PR in. Right now that PR is limited to Stephen's repo. Put an actual PR and we'll take into account these other sets of things that need to change. And it sounds like it will affect 36 and 37 likely. Back to you, Sam.
Thank you, Stephen, for that involved discussion. Next up is Daniel Bloom with Toolbox Stuff. Can you unshare, Stephen?
All right. Okay. Quick sound check and screen check.
Good on both.
Okay, cool. Okay, so I've given this demo a few times. So if you've seen it before, I'm sorry. It's been on a few different calls to this point. But I'll tack a little bit onto the end. So if you've seen it before, I'll add a little bit of extra. But I'll show the recent changes we've made to the toolbox, which are we added a payments kind of admin protocol. And we've also started a transition to a newer, better, less ACAPI flavored invitations and connections admin protocols as well. So in the terminal window I have here, I have a Docker Compose running to agents for me, to ACAPI agents. This is the same Docker file that is available in the Aries ACAPI plugin toolbox repository. And that is just providing me with an Alice and a Bob agent, which have all the dependencies set up and everything. And it has spouted out a couple of invitations and I've pasted them into the toolbox, which I have on the right here. So I think this is familiar to a lot of you probably at this point, but we can open up a session, so to speak, with Alice and Bob. And then this list here is populated based off of the protocols supported by the connected agent. So our Alice agent supports each of these protocols here, these admin protocols, and so it shows up in this list. So I'll start off with payments. And for the payments, as we implemented it with the ACAPI plugin, we're using the Sovereign Network, which is on Sovereign Staging Net, I should say, which requires the transaction author agreement and payments. Since you can include some extra information, that transaction author agreement also applies to payment transfers. So we accept the agreement. And then that allows us to continue to play with this payments interface.
Let me interject here that this transaction author agreement was not hard-coded into the toolbox. That's the author agreement that got that it was told by its connected agent needed to be accepted. So if there are other agreements or no agreements, the agent that you're connected with will actually say that. So ACAPI actually it told the toolbox, hey, here's an agreement the user will need to agree to, and then it displayed it. There's nothing specific to the sovereign transaction author agreement in the toolbox itself.
Yep, thank you for that clarification. So just like all these protocols that are displayed here, there's actually a transaction author agreement admin protocol, and that check is gated by whether the connected agent supports that protocol or not. So Yeah. So from this point, I'm going to go ahead and create a payment address. And currently, we only have a sovereign payment method, since that's what we've implemented in this first pass. And we can optionally specify a seed in case we're recreating the same address that we've used previously or something like that. But I'll go ahead and just create one without a seed. And now we have our sovereign payment address. So in order to get test tokens on the sovereign staging net, we can use a self-serve application that the Sovereign Foundation is hosting. I need to copy that payment address before I can use this. And we can select the staging network, paste in a payment address into this field and hit submit. And it will transfer this big number of Sovatoms, which translates into 2,000 tokens total. So if we return to the toolbox, since the payment stuff is happening on the ledger with no direct communication between the self-serve app and our Alice agent, we actually have to manually trigger a refresh, but we can see that we now have 2,000 tokens. Okay, so for this next bit, I'm going to transfer from Alice to Bob a certain number of tokens. So Bob will also need a payment address, which necessitates signing or agreeing to the transaction author agreement. And we can go ahead and create an address. And at this point, since I have both windows open on my screen right now, I could, in theory, copy just straight over into the transfer dialog, or rather the other direction actually, and make the transfer that way. But to just kind of demonstrate what this could in theory look like, if you're actually interacting with somebody remotely over our pairwise connection with them. And I guess this is a good opportunity to showcase the revision of invitations and connections that we've taken as well. So this is quite similar. I won't go too much into detail into the exact changes, I guess, but we can go ahead and say that this is a connection that we're going to give to Bob, and we can keep the rest of that same. And then we can copy that URL over here. And we now have a connection established between Alice and Bob. This information that is returned here, this is where the biggest changes actually occurred in the rework. So before, there was a lot of information that was included that was specific to ACAPI, which was fine. It was kind of our first pass at the plugin, but we didn't want to force those attributes to be included for other agents that wish to implement the same admin protocol. So these are the actual fields that are required for this protocol and no more. And then you can actually have an optional raw representation field, which gives more of the debug kind of information that ACAPI can return. And so this gives us both kind of a cleaner protocol interface, so to speak, since it doesn't include a bunch of information that we don't need from the toolbox perspective, but it also gives us the debuggability by giving us all the values that we might want to inspect about this connection anyways. So, yeah. So we have a connection. This is the old view. I need that for reasons, just for the message interface to know about the connection. And that's a change that we will hopefully make sometime in the near future. But now that we have Alice and Bob connected here, I can send a message to Bob and say, hey, send me some money. I can spell it. And then we can go to our payments, copy our payment address and say, or rather, I've misspoken. Actually, I'm going to send you some money. There we go. So we can paste in our payment address and then we can go here and say, Okay, I'm going to take this payment address and transfer, selecting our payment method and then our address, and then pasting in our to address from Bob. And we'll go ahead and say an amount of 11, I guess. And then this will check for fees. We have built into the admin payment protocol the ability to accommodate a payment method that has fees that are based on a percentage of the amount being transferred, or ones that are essentially constant regardless of the amount being transferred. So that check fees step will go and then provide the amount to be transferred and see if it's a variable fee, and then report what was found. And so we can see that the Sovereign Staging Net has a transfer fee of 1 token. So the total amount that will be deducted from our payment address on the Alice side will be a total of 12. And then we can go ahead and say transfer and see a transfer complete notification, pull up the payments, and we can see we now have our 11 tokens on Bob's side. So, and then included with the payments, we also have a bit of a debug information that you can include as part of your transfers. And this kind of just describes the sources, the unspent transaction that represents the, or that add up to the balance of this address. And so we can see that we have a balance of 11, which contributes there, and the balance of this number, which contributes there. So, yeah, so that's the payment transfer that we've built into the toolbox. In the future, we can hopefully have the ability to integrate this into credential exchange flows, which we can also demonstrate through the toolbox. And I guess you can kind of get that with a little bit more of some manual negotiation and payment transfer before or after, I guess, credentials exchange. So these changes, we've also done a better job of documenting those protocols recently. So in the Aries toolbox repository, we have a docs folder and we have protocols that are now being documented. And the type in the protocol message is actually linking directly to these readmes inside of this GitHub repository. So if we were to paste in the type, or if we got a type for the admin message, admin basic message deleted, it would take us to this README, which would link us to our main doc README for that protocol. So yeah, we have basic message, admin protocol, connections, invitations, and payments. So if we go and inspect some of the messages that we just used in that transfer, we can see that we have kind of a base structure that's recurring in some of our structures. We have a create address, a get address list, get fees, and so on. So yeah, I think that's the bulk of what I intended to demonstrate. Are there any clarifications that need to be made that I left out, Sam?
I don't think so. The point of trying to generalize the protocols was that we wanted anyone who had an agent that they used, that wanted to use, you know, for connections or invitations management or any of the others, we wanted them to be able to implement it as easy as possible. And so we went through and tried to, we just had a conversation about de-indifying those protocols. We were trying to remove the biases that, that Akapai had. They're not bad biases, but they're probably different in other platforms. And so we're trying to make them simple enough and generic enough that it's easy to implement by others. And so if you implement the same protocol as documented, then the same, you know, and that becomes published in the Discover Features protocol, then that module will turn on in the toolbox when you connect with your agent and you'll be able to interact with it. So that was the motivating factor. The ultimate goal is to get all the way through the protocols we use. We haven't yet, but we are. You'll also notice that we're not basing the protocols off of DIDCOM or something else. We long had the concept that anyone should be able to create a protocol. And so basing those protocols out of the toolbox itself gives us an opportunity to sort of base the protocol documentation there and make that happen. So that was the motivating factor behind the sort of the minor changes there as well to make it sort of more universal as people might want to use it with different agents than Echo Pi, of course. So.
Cool, thank you. Any other questions I can answer quickly?
This is a side conversation, so I'll message you, the one that I was going to bring up at the beginning.
Okay, sounds good. Right. Go ahead and stop sharing my screen then.
Cool. It's fun to be able to see a UI on top of that from an open source perspective and be able to inspect the stuff going on underneath as well. So that was awesome demo. Thank you, Daniel. Any comments? We've got 2 minutes left in the end of our meeting slot. Are there any comments or most appreciably volunteers and or suggested topics for next week's meeting? Andrew used his new fancy icons to clap briefly. Awesome. Okay, sounds like mediators might be a really good topic. I'll try and organize some stuff so that we can have some meaningful conversation next week. And ideally, we make all the progress that we need on the DID exchange protocol, and we can address the status of that too, so that we can figure out what else needs to be done before we move on to adoption there. Yes.
One other topic maybe, and I'll just throw this out, is maybe we talk about the repos that are, and the naming of repos that are being added. It sounds like there's a few, and people are individually coming up with things that they think should be added. Maybe we should talk about it as a community, what those should be.
Gizmo. Sounds perfect. Awesome. We'll do it. Thanks, everybody. And we will have a great week. See you on Rocket Chat and in Issues, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks.
See ya.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good week.